Okay, we're going to continue on in our study of the pre-incarnate Son of God as a person, looking at the fact that the person, the Son of God, before he came to be flesh, he was active. He was active not only as we've seen in eternity past with the creation of the creation of spirit beings, the making of the ages, and the creation of the material universe. He was responsible for that activity. And then he has dealt with mankind, and he's appeared to men. He walked with men. He appeared physically to them. He appeared in different ways. He was with the Israelites in the tabernacle during when it was completed. He was with them before that in the wilderness. There was a visual representation as well as in the temple. And we've moved on in through the kings. There were a few instances in the kings where he appeared to different ones. But we've been now focusing on the presence of Jehovah as the pre-incarnate Son of God when he was present with various individuals. He was still in the temple, but yet his presence was known, and it was a personal presence of Jehovah, and the one who appeared and the one who was there speaking was none other than the pre-incarnate Son of God. The Father and the Son, they didn't manifest deity to mankind, but we do find that the pre-incarnate Son, he was the one who bore deity out so that men could see deity. So when there was a representation of deity, it was the pre-incarnate Son throughout the Old Testament. And so we began last week looking at Jeremiah, and we find this phrase in Jeremiah a lot of times. Jehovah was to Jeremiah, and we pointed out that it's something like 43 or 44 times that we find that phrase in Jeremiah. Now, when we come to Ezekiel is he uses it just a little bit more. You have at least 47 times where you find the word of Jehovah was to Ezekiel, and then you have a few times in once or twice in a couple some of the other minor so-called minor prophets, and Zechariah. I think Hosea has a few more, but Zechariah has a number of occurrences. And we'll refer to those later on. But we see that Jehovah did have a relationship, and he was present. There was a presence when he actually spoke to the prophets. And so he says that the AV translates that the word of Jehovah came to Jeremiah. And that's what we've been looking at. But there was a presence. His being was there. And we noticed that last week in Jeremiah chapter 1, where Jehovah actually was there. He spoke to Jeremiah. It says that the word of Jehovah was to Jeremiah. And we saw that beginning in verse 2. And about six times between in chapter 1 and 2:1, we find this phrase that Jehovah was to Jeremiah, or to me, Jeremiah says. And so Jehovah was there, and he met with him. Now, we pointed out also that Jehovah spoke to Jeremiah when he was with him. He spoke to him, and then Jeremiah responded back to him. So there was a conversation that went on between Jehovah and between Jeremiah. And then we noted also that Jehovah, he said he put forth his hand in verse 9 and touched my lips, and he put his words in Jeremiah's mouth. And we would take it literally that he stretched forth his hand and touched him on his mouth, and he put his words there. But Jeremiah wasn't just speaking to nothing. He was speaking to, he was carrying on a conversation with Jehovah in the context. And so we're not really, our focus wasn't to come to Jeremiah and do a study of Jeremiah, but we do want to look at some of these places where it does say, and we'll see what the pre-incarnate Son of God had to say and why he came and met with Jeremiah the prophet. And he did that on quite a few different occasions. And so you find that emphasis, and you can see the narration, you can see the discourse that was going on. You can see the interchange between Jeremiah and Jehovah. But Jehovah gives Jeremiah the words to speak to Judah. Now, he does refer to Israel sometimes, to the northern tribes. Sometimes he refers to it as Ephraim, just as the southern kingdom was known as Judah. The northern kingdom was sometimes referred to as Ephraim. But Israel at this time, when Jeremiah writes and when Jehovah was with him and spoke to him, at that time, Israel, the northern kingdom, was away in captivity. And Isaiah wrote of that when he was about the dealings with Israel. And so Isaiah wrote before Jeremiah and had much to say. Now, Isaiah is a longer book. It's a long Old Testament book with 66 chapters, whatever. So as you go back and look at it, it's rather interesting. I'll just insert this in just kind of for interest's sake. But if you look back at Isaiah chapter 38, this is the only place that you find this verb, this to-be verb, used of the coming of Jehovah, and it was to Isaiah. And this is in the context when Hezekiah was sick, and Hezekiah prays to Jehovah in chapter 38, and he addresses Jehovah. But we find then, after he communicates to Jehovah, in verse 4, 38:4, this is the only place, again, you find this phrase. Then was the word of Jehovah to Isaiah, saying. And so he's to go to speak to Hezekiah and give information to him concerning the setting of the sundial back 10 degrees, whatever. And he was going to restore health to him and give him added years. But that's the one place where Jehovah was. Now, you go back to the beginning of Isaiah, and you see the visions of Isaiah. And so he did see Jehovah, but was not a personal presence, apparently, because it was a vision. He saw him in a vision, and he did appear to him in a vision. And that would have been the pre-incarnate Son of God, again, who appeared to Isaiah in vision. But as we come to Jeremiah once more, we want to notice just in background that last week we pointed out in verses 2 and 3, we have the duration of Jeremiah's ministry. And it says, to whom the word of Jehovah was in the days of Josiah, the son of Ammon, king of Judah, in the 13th year of his reign. And so we pointed out last week that his ministry began around 628 to 627 B.C., and then it says in verse 3, he was, we would translate it, because it's going back up to the word. And as I said last time, I would be inclined to capitalize the word, the word was. And so the word, now we know the word from John 1:1, in any beginning, the word continuously was in existence. And he was face to face with God continuously, and he was continuously deity. He always was God. And so this would be the word. But the word was to, but the word speaks. And we pointed that out last time. We'll look at that again when we move into the chapters we're going to be looking at this morning. But it was in the days of, so it was, began about 628, 627 B.C., and so he came in the days of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, the king of Judah, unto the end of the 11th year of Zedekiah, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, unto the carrying away of Jerusalem captive in the 5th month. And so this would go down to 586 B.C. Now and then Jeremiah was, the Jews who were in the land, left in the land, they fled away and they went down to Egypt, and you can trace Jeremiah down to Egypt, where eventually he dies. But his ministry covers that scope through these kings. He doesn't list all of the kings, but you have one good king listed there, and that's Josiah. Now, God was already going to deal in his wrath upon upon Judah due to Manasseh, the son of Hezekiah, earlier. But Josiah, he was a good king in the midst of these. His father Ammon was bad. His sons were bad. In fact, Jehoahash was removed after 3 months and hauled off to hauled off into captivity. And the king of Babylon set up his son. You had Jehoiakim set up. Well, that was king of Egypt at that point, if I remember now. But Jehoiakim was a bad king. And so you see traces through there in between. You're going to have other kings mentioned. Now, I just want to point something out about the construction and Jeremiah's prophecy. Jeremiah did not write in chronological order. You don't have a chronology of the kings. In fact, you'll see you won't see the kings again until we get over to chapter 21. And let me see, it's 21:1. You'll pick up Zedekiah. And then in chapter 22, in verse 18, you pick up Jehoiakim. And then in between, after that, you pick up Jehoiakim's son, Coniah, which is also referred to as Jehoiachin or Jeconiah. He has three different names that are applied to him. But they're all bad kings. But you see, just where you find them spoken of first, they're not in a chronological order. And so he spends a lot of time describing what would take place in the final judgment upon Judah with Zedekiah, because we find Zedekiah referred to 46 times, beginning in chapter 21 and going down to the end. And yet we have Jehoiakim, he begins in 22:18, though he lived before Zedekiah, and you have Coniah in between. And so you have these, it isn't chronological. So he moves, Jehovah gives Jeremiah a prophecy concerning Judah and the future judgment upon Judah. But as he does, as he speaks, it all begins with Josiah, who's mentioned 17 times, usually as the father of somebody, of one of these kings, of the kings. But anyway, Josiah, he was a good king, but in his day, Jeremiah began to prophesy, and he brought up the backsliding of Israel and their idolatry. And so he deals with that even under the good king, Josiah. He begins his warnings to the southern kingdom, Judah. Now, you have that with under Josiah. Now, in chapter 3, you do find that Jehovah divorced Israel. He divorced his people, and we find a reference to that because of their backsliding. And so, we didn't look at this last time, but he does speak of these things in the last days of Josiah, back in 3:6. But he speaks of backsliding Israel and what she's done, and then we see her treacherous sister Judah. She saw it, and I saw in verse 7, at the end of verse 7, but then in verse 8, and when I saw, when for all the causes whereby backsliding Israel committed adultery, that is spiritual adultery, I had put her away and given her a bill of divorce. Yet her treacherous sister Judah feared not, but went and played the harlot also. And so they went after idols, and so God, he will take them back, but in the meantime, he took Israel, the northern kingdom, away in judgment, into captivity, and Judah, the judgment upon Judah is impending. Now, it takes some time from Josiah's reign all the way down to Zedekiah, and then ultimately, they're taken away in 586 B.C., and Jerusalem is destroyed at that time. And so you have but Jehovah, the word of Jehovah was with Jeremiah. Now, we don't see that phrase again until we get over to chapter 7. So from 2:1 to on over to chapter 7, These things that were spoken by Jehovah were spoken when he was with Jeremiah at the beginning of 2:1. But as we come down to chapter 7 and verse 1, it says, the word that was to Jeremiah from Jehovah saying. And so it was present. There was a presence of the word with Jeremiah. And again, and we're going to take a look at this section where the word of Jehovah was with him. And it covers over to the beginning of chapter 11. And in that section again, we find that Jehovah is dealing with this backslidden Judah. He's going to deal with them. He gives them some warning. He gives them opportunity to repent, to change their ways, and they could remain in the land. But they're not going to do so, and he knows it. And they're going to ultimately be judged, and it's going to bring about some sorrow. Jeremiah didn't have an easy task, and if you read through Jeremiah, you see that Jeremiah suffered a lot of things as a prophet. In fact, he is often referred to as the weeping prophet. And so he's known as the weeping prophet. And we're going to see that he weeps over the condition of Israel, and we're going to see their mourning as a result of God's dealing with them as it's anticipated, and it will come upon them. And so this is where we're going to do that. But before we get there, I'm going to step over into the Gospels just for a moment, into the Gospel of Matthew. And so let's look to the Lord, and we'll go ahead and look into the Word. Father, we're thankful for the morning and for the opportunity that we have to assemble together as we have this beautiful morning. We're grateful again for your provisions for us under grace, the things that we have in common that bring us together, and that is you and your word. And so as we focus on your word, again, might we be in tune to the Spirit, even as we look at these things that don't necessarily pertain to us in any way. They are historical things, and yet they were prophetic at the time they were spoken. And yet, just as any prophecies that you've given, they were fulfilled in giving us evidence again that when you promise something and you prophesy something, that we can depend upon it, that it will take place just as you said, just as it did back in the days of Jeremiah. And so we're thankful again as we look into your word that it is your word, and yet it did have some important, it was very important, dealing with the activity of Judah and the people of Judah at that time. And yet we're thankful again that you have, by your grace, given us a new covenant, not the one to Israel, but a covenant that does pertain to us. It's by the blood of your Son, and we're thankful again that things have changed in this dispensation of grace, that we do have something better, and that you have given us revelation that we live by. But again, we know that these historical accounts, they're your word again, and though we don't practice what is said, yet we can learn from it. And so again, might we be in tune to the Spirit. Amen. Okay, I want to go over to Matthew chapter 23 to begin. And we have something about that the incarnate Son of God, the Lord Jesus Christ, had to say as his ministry is drawing down towards the end. And he's there in Jerusalem. He's speaking to the multitudes, and he warns them about the scribes and the Pharisees. And I just want to point something out that he had to say in verse 2. He said, the scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. But notice the end, we'll just read verse 3. All therefore, whatsoever they bid you observe, that observe and do. So they were under the law. They were to obey the law. But notice these scribes and Pharisees. But do not ye after their works, for they say and do not. And so the scribes and the Pharisees, these religious leaders in Israel, these students of the Old Testament, they could teach the law, but they didn't practice it. And yet it was there for their practice. And so he said, don't do what they do what they say, but don't do what they do, because they ignored it. And he goes on, they did it so men could see what they were doing at the beginning of verse 5. And you see there that was their whole focus. Now, when we get down to verse 13, we begin a series of eight woes that are called upon the scribes and the Pharisees, hypocrites. And he calls them hypocrites. And they were. They would do things, but it was all for show and all to promote themselves. And so they were doing this in Jerusalem. And so he warns them of their judgment. You get over to the 30th verse, and he says, "And if ye had been in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets," they would say. "Wherefore, you are witnesses unto yourselves or against yourselves that ye are the sons of them which killed the prophets. Fill ye up the measure of your fathers." And so they weren't responsible, directly responsible for killing the prophets. But yet they were the offspring. And if they had been there when the prophets were killed by their forefathers, they would have killed them. And so this is what the Jews would have done in his day, in the Lord's day here upon earth. And so he calls them a bunch of snakes, sons of snakes, a race of vipers, poisonous snakes. And so how can you escape the judgment of Gehenna? And so it's not the condemnation of hell. We just say it literally. It just says the judgment of Gehenna. So how are you going to escape this? And so he said he's going to send some prophets and scribes, and they're going to kill and crucify some of them. They're going to scourge them in the synagogues and persecute them from city to city. Now, in a way, he's the one who's sending these prophets and so on. Who sent the prophets to Israel? Well, God did. And so in a roundabout way, he is saying that he is claiming to be deity, that he's going to send them himself. And he goes back to the guilt of these of the Jewish people, though. Now, before it was just the human race, at the beginning of the human race, he begins there in verse 35, that upon you may come all the righteous blood shed upon the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel unto the blood of Zacharias, the son of Berechias, whom ye slew between the temple and the altar. Truly I say unto you, all these things shall come upon this race. And we could translate generation in both the instances where I ran over it. I translated race. And so this race of Jews, they're going to be judged. But they were responsible. They would be responsible. And they were going to kill him. They were going to crucify him. And he would give up his life. But they were responsible for crucifying him and for his death. Now in verse 37, back in Jeremiah's day, the pre-incarnate Son of God had much to do with Jerusalem. And we're going to notice that when we get back to Jeremiah again. But he does refer to Judah and Jerusalem. And Jerusalem was the capital of United Kingdom. That was the focus of the government, with the division of the country into two kingdoms. Then it was still the capital of the southern kingdom, Judah, and so this is where they reigned. Now in the Lord's day, you have just the Jews here again in Israel, and they're waiting for the king to come, and the king has come. But they've rejected him, and they're going to reject him, and they're not going to accept those whom he will send out in the near future. But it says, "O Jerusalem," he says, "O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, that killest the prophets and stonest them which are sent unto thee, how often would I have gathered thy children together, even as a hen gathereth her chickens under her wings, and you would not." And so he wanted to, he had this desire, he wanted to often to gather the children of Jerusalem. And he would have taken them like a mother hen would take her chicks and put them under her wing. There they would be comforted, they would be protected, and yet they were going to have a judgment in their day now as he's crying out to Jerusalem. Now, Jeremiah's warning, it's dealing with an impending judgment that is going to come. And the judgment that's going to come upon Judah, they're going to be carried off into captivity into Babylon. And so with Nebuchadnezzar, it's coming, it's impending. And it takes a while through several kings before he brings the Nebuchadnezzar down in judgment upon Judah. But now, there's another impending judgment in the days of his earthly reign, and this is going to be when Rome comes in, and they, in 70 AD, they destroy the temple, and they again are taken away. And so they become subservient again. But this is, they were already under Roman rule, but they're going to be destroyed. Jerusalem will be destroyed, and that's what he says, "Behold, your house is left unto you desolate, for I say unto you, ye shall not see me henceforth till ye shall say, blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord." And so it'd be blessed is he that cometh in the name of Jehovah, really, looking at his deities coming in the character of deity. And so they wouldn't say that. Now, he's not there, these individuals will not see him. These in Jerusalem, the scribes, the Pharisees, these leaders, they will not see him again until he comes back at his second coming. And this is not the rapture here, but it is the second coming. And remember, the rapture was still a mystery at this time, and he will come in the name of the character of Jehovah. And so this is an anticipation of the second coming. And there would be others who would see him at the rapture. There would be others who would see him following his resurrection, but these would not. And so we can say that. They wouldn't see him after his resurrection and before his ascension. They wouldn't see him at the rapture. But they will see him when he comes back in the character of Jehovah. And that is not going to be a nice thing, but then it's going to be in judgment. But he does speak here of his concern for Jerusalem. Now, back in Jeremiah, we'll go back to Jeremiah chapter 7, and here we do find that there was a concern there for Jeremiah at that time. There was a concern for Jeremiah, a concern for Jerusalem in Jeremiah's day, as Jehovah was to Jeremiah. And so in chapter 7, verse 1, it says, the word that was to Jeremiah from Jehovah saying, and so he gives him he wants him to stand in the gate of the temple. Now, I mentioned Jerusalem over in verse 17. You see it first mentioned here. You see Judah. He said, "Seest thou not what they do in the cities of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem?" And so back earlier in the history of Israel, when the pre-incarnate Son of God was to Jeremiah, things aren't good in Jerusalem at this time either, as they won't be later on when he becomes flesh and tents amongst men. And so he says, "Stand in the gate of Jehovah's house and proclaim there his word and say, hear the word from the Lord, all ye of Judah that enter in at the gates at these gates to worship Jehovah." And so you have this. He tells Jeremiah to go out and to stand in the gates of the temple, and the warning goes out to those who come. But it's the word. You notice what he's to proclaim, though, and what he tells them. He says, "Hear the word of Jehovah." And so he's got this from the presence of the one who personally is the word of Jehovah, who was to him. And so the word of Jehovah was to Jeremiah, but he speaks to Jeremiah, and it's his word that is spoken. Now, with what he's to tell these people, we'll just look at a few references here just to emphasize that when the Lord word was to Jeremiah, he spoke to him and he gave him some words. And so in verse 3, it says, "Thus saith Jehovah of hosts," that is Jehovah Sabaoth, "the God of Israel." So he is the Elohim of Israel. He speaks, though. He says, and he's speaking how? Through Jeremiah the prophet. And so just as in chapter 1 he put his words in the mouth of Jeremiah, Jeremiah is speaking the words of Jehovah. But these are the words that Jehovah gives to him, and he speaks the words of Jehovah. Down at the end of verse 11, again you see it says, I have seen it, saith Jehovah. And you see it again in 19. Do they provoke me to anger, saith Jehovah? Yeah, they do. Therefore, thus saith Jehovah, or here it's the Adonai Jehovah, and you have a switch in the names, but here, thus saith the Adonai Jehovah. So he's the one speaking, but he speaks through the mouth of Jeremiah to the people. But he is speaking here. In verse 21, thus saith Jehovah Sabaoth, the Elohim of Israel, again. Now we're going to see, as you notice, we've seen a couple of times Jehovah of hosts, it says. Jehovah Sabaoth is one of his names in the Old Testament. And he is the Lord of hosts. He is the one who's over the heavenly hosts. He is the one who's over spirit beings. And so he has his heavenly armies. As you could see the description there, he's over the heavenly armies, over the unfallen spirit beings of heaven. Now, as you go down to verse 30, again you see that in his sight, in my sight, saith Jehovah. But what he says, that the sons of Judah have done evil in his sight. And verse 32, the days come, saith Jehovah. And then at verse 1 of chapter 8, at that time, saith Jehovah. And you can just trace it on down. We won't go through all of these at this moment, but he speaks through Jeremiah. But the word was to Jeremiah, and he gives him the words to speak. And so he speaks these words, he's to speak these words to the people of Judah who come to the temple. Now, as you begin in verse 3, what Jehovah Sabaoth did say to them, he had an appeal to the people of Judah to change their ways. And they definitely need to make some changes. And so he encourages them not to trust in lying words. And so they've been paying attention to lies, and that's what we see down through this section. They've received faulty teaching all the way over to chapter 8 and verse 16. But they aren't to pay attention to deceitful lying words and false teaching. Yet they have done so. And the first appeal that we find in the first, as he gives these, as he speaks in the gate of the temple, Jeremiah is to instruct them to change their ways, essentially, in the first four, verses 2 through 4, or 3 through 4. And so he says, thus saith Jehovah, and we'll just say Sabaoth, which is what the name hosts is here, the Elohim, the God of Israel, amend your ways. They need to make their ways good. They've been bad, they need to make them good. And your doings, and I will cause you to dwell in this place. And so they will temporarily dwell in this place if they do good at this time during the reign of Josiah. Trust ye not in the lying words in verse 4, saying, the temple of Jehovah, the temple of Jehovah, the temple of Jehovah are these. And so they, the lying words, they were just saying, the teachers of the time, they were saying, the temple of Jehovah, the temple's here, Jehovah's here, we don't have anything to worry about, we don't have to, but they weren't trusting in Jehovah either, they were doing their own thing. And so he says, you need to do good, you need to make your ways good. You haven't been doing good. And so we see that they've been following lying words. But just the fact that the temple there, that wasn't enough for them to depend upon just the temple and the presence of the temple there. And yet the temple was there in their midst. We'll see some of the other terms that are stated a little bit later on as we move on through these chapters. But he says, for if you thoroughly amend, if you make good your ways and your doings, if you thoroughly execute judgment between a man and his neighbor, if you oppress not the stranger and the fatherless and the widow and shed not innocent blood in this place, neither walk out after other gods, other Elohim, to your hurt, then will I cause you to dwell in this place. And so it's going to be it's still a temporary thing, but you'll be dwelling in this place, in the land that I gave to your fathers, and he gave it to them into perpetuity. And so they have the land that was promised. And so the land of your fathers would go back to the land promised in the first Abrahamic covenant, back in Genesis chapter 15, beginning in verse 18, with the land promises that were given to Abraham. And they would be able to dwell in that land. But then we see the problem that they had with their trust in lying words and their abuse of Jehovah's house in the next verses here in 8 through 11. Behold, you trust in lying words and cannot profit. So they do trust in deceitful lying words. So now he asks some questions here. Will ye steal? Now he's going to cover about six of the ten commandments, the ten words. He says, will ye steal? And that would be the eighth commandment, murder, the sixth commandment, and commit adultery, commandment seven, and swear falsely, commandment nine, burn incense unto Baal, and that's commandment two, and walk after other Elohim, whom ye know not, commandment one. And so are you doing these things? And they were. And they essentially doing these kind of things. And come and stand before me in this house after they've done these things. This house whereupon my name is called. And say, we are delivered to do all these abominations. And so they think that they can get away with the temple. The temple's here in our midst. And so they think that they can get away with these things that are really desecrations when they come to the temple. Is this house which is called by my name become, or my name called upon it, become a den of robbers in your eyes? Now remember, back in the Lord's day, he went in and they had set up their, they were doing business, carrying on business with selling the sacrifices and things in the temple. He drove the money, he dumped their tables over and drove them out of the temple. And he said that you turned my house into a den of thieves. Well, that's essentially what he sees them doing here in Jeremiah's day. Are you doing that? It's become a den of robbers in your eyes? Behold, even I have seen it, saith Jehovah. Now, when he speaks there, that's kind of an anthropomorphic kind of an idea using human terminology. He doesn't have to see it, but with his eyes, but he was there. And so he sees it in the fact that he is omniscient. He knows what's going on. And so he does see it in that sense. And so we see they were trusting, though, in lying words. They thought they could get away with this activity, breaking the law and going after other gods and becoming idolatrous and worshiping, committing spiritual adultery, just as Israel had done. But as we come to verse 12, he uses the northern kingdom as an illustration. And so you have an illustration of what took place with Israel. And the same thing it can take place with respect to Judah. And so he encourages them. He says, but go ye now unto my place, which is Shiloh. And this was where they set up, established the tent at first, where I set my name at the first, and see what I did to it for the wickedness of my people Israel. And so he removed Israel out of the northern kingdom, out of the land. And now, because ye have done all these works, saith Jehovah, and I spake unto you, rising up early and speaking, but ye heard not, and I called you, but ye answered not. They didn't pay attention to the prophets. Therefore will I do this, do unto this house, which is called by my name, his name is called upon it, wherein ye trust, and unto the place which I gave to you and to your fathers, as I have done to Shiloh. So they're trusting in this place. And this is the thing. This is what you trust in. You trust in the temple. They're not trusting in the God that's in the temple, but the temple, the temple, the temple, as we saw back in verse 4, and they're trusting in that place. And so he's going to, as long as they do that, they're going to be have the same thing happen to them that happened to the northern kingdom, as they'll be kicked out of the land. Verse 15 goes on, "And I will cast you out of my sight, as I have cast out all your brethren, even the whole seed of Ephraim." And so there is the anticipation. They're going to be, God is going to throw them out of the land, and they're going to go into captivity. And here Ephraim, the seed of Ephraim, looks at the largest tribe of the northern kingdom, and it's applied to the whole northern kingdom. But God will kick them out of the land because they are following these lies. They're listening to lies, and they think they can get away with their breaking the Mosaic law, and that they can get away with their spiritual adultery and worship idols and get away with it just because the temple is there. Now, Jeremiah, this is kind of interesting. Now, the Lord now speaks to Jeremiah, and he gives some instruction to him not to pray for the people of Judah. And so he does have a concern for the people of Judah. But he said, "But in verse 16, therefore pray not thou for this people." You, Jeremiah, emphatically, "do not pray for this people, neither lift up crying or prayer for them, neither make intercession to me for them, for I will not hear thee. Seest thou not what they do in the cities of Judah and the streets of Jerusalem?" Now, I just described some of the things over in verse 8, what they've done. "The sons gather wood, and the fathers kindle fire, and the women knead their dough to make cakes to the queen, or the framework of the workmanship of heaven, and to pour out drink offerings unto other gods, unto other Elohim, that they may provoke me to anger. Do they provoke me to anger, saith Jehovah? Do they not provoke themselves to the confusion of their own faces?" And so they listen to lies, and they don't really have a comprehension as to what's going on. Therefore, as we come to verse 20, verses 20 through 27, Jehovah is going to pour out his fury upon the southern kingdom, Judah. "Therefore saith the Adonai Jehovah," and notice the spelling of the two terms there, "behold, mine anger and my fury shall be poured out upon this place, upon man, and upon beast, and upon the trees of the field, and upon the fruit of the ground, and it shall burn and shall not be quenched." And so he's going to bring judgment. "Thus saith Jehovah Sabaoth, the Elohim of Israel, put your burnt offerings unto your sacrifices and eat flesh, for I speak not unto your fathers, nor commanded I spake not unto your fathers, nor commanded them in that day that I brought them out of the land of Egypt concerning burnt offerings or sacrifices. But this thing I commanded I them, saying, obey my voice, and I will be your God, and you shall be my people, and walk in all the ways that I have commanded you, that it may be well with you." Now, when did God tell them? They were to obey him, but when did he speak these words to them? He would do for them. They just needed to do what he said and follow. And as they came out of the land, and we could go back to Exodus 19, where he said he would take them up upon the wings of eagles, and he would deliver them through the wilderness. But they said, "All that Jehovah hath said, we will do." And so they were presumptuous. They thought they could do it themselves even back then. But all he asked them to do was to obey, and he would be their God, and they would be his people. They could have been a kingdom of priests back then, but they chose not. So God gave them a priesthood. He gave them a law so that they could do with something to do. And so they hearkened not, it says, nor inclined their ear, but walked in the counsels and in the imaginations of their evil heart. And they went backward. They were stubborn and not forward. And so he sent them prophets, and they still wouldn't listen. Verse 26, "And they did worse than your fathers. They did more evil than their fathers." And so they didn't change. And that's what we see, is his fury is going to be poured out upon Judah. And so verse 27, therefore thou shalt speak all these words unto them, that he's been speaking to them, but they will not hearken to thee. Thou shalt also call unto them, but they will not answer thee. So he's to warn the people. He's to speak words to them that Jehovah spoke to him, but they're not going to pay attention. And so he's guaranteed that his audience isn't going to listen. He's not to pray for them. He's not to really intercede for them. God won't hear him, and they're not going to hear Jeremiah either. Now, when we come down to verse 28, you have the problem with their involvement with the temple again. And in verse 28, there's the absence of truth. But thou shalt say unto them, this is a nation that obeyeth not the voice of Jehovah their Elohim, nor receiveth correction. They don't receive instruction. Truth is perished and is cut off from their mouth. So they don't pay attention to what Jehovah has said, and they do follow lies. In fact, you get down to verses 30 through 33, you see that they were sacrificing children. That's what the Gentiles did. You see some of that going on in those verses. But in verse 34, then will I cause to cease from the cities of Judah and from the streets of Jerusalem the voice of mirth and the voice of gladness, the voice of the bridegroom and the voice of the bride, for the land shall be desolate. It's going to become a waste. And so there you have the promise of impending judgment when they're going to be carried off away from the land. And the land will be desolate in the future. Now, there's some dangers of false teaching when we move on down to chapter 8. And we'll begin in verses 4 through 17. And he says, moreover, thou shalt say unto them, thus saith Jehovah, shall they fall and not arise? Shall he turn away and not return? He describes how they're perpetually sliding back in verse 5 and so on. But as we move down in 8 through 10, how do you say, we are wise and the law of Jehovah is with us? So see, they were claiming they had the law with them, but yet they were breaking the law all over the place. Lo, certainly, it says, in vain made he it. That's what they say. And so when it says, in vain made he it, the pen of the scribe is in vain. But it's a falsehood. It's empty, what they are saying. The wise men are ashamed. They are dismayed. They're shattered and taken low. They have rejected the word from Jehovah and what that wisdom is in them. And what is that wisdom in them? Well, they've rejected what Jehovah said. Therefore, will I give their wives unto others and their fields to them that shall inherit them, for everyone from the least even unto the greatest is given to covetousness, from the prophet even unto the priest. Everyone dealeth falsely. So notice, the prophets and the priest, every one of them, they're all bad, and God will deal with them as a result of that. Notice verse 11. Now, before they were depending upon the temple, but now these the prophets, the priests, they are saying, peace, when there is no peace. And so they're saying there is peace, but God is going to bring judgment upon them as a result of their evil. Now, let me see. Look at the time. Shouldn't say that, but I did. Okay, we're going to skip down a little bit now, and we want to move on down. The people, he says, they've sinned against Jehovah at the end of verse 14. But there was a lot of falsehood being carried on by the leadership. You see this in other prophets as well. But we want to go down to verse 18. And now we see Jeremiah's sorrow for the people of Israel. And there is he is sad as he observes what the people have done and what they're doing. And we'll just read verse 8. We'll start at verse 18. When I would comfort myself against sorrow, my heart is faint in me. And so it's like his heart is just kind of pressing upon him. Behold the voice of the cry of the daughter of my people because of them that dwell in the far country. And so those who were carried away captive in Israel before, is not Jehovah in Zion? Is not her king in her? Why have they provoked me to anger with their graven images and their strange vanities, their vapors, things that are passing away? And he goes on to describe some of that. But he goes on to describe that there's no balm, there's nothing to heal them. And in Gilead, he says in verse 22, in verse 9, chapter 9, verse 1, as he speaks of tears and so on as you go on down. But in verse 3, he comes back to the, you have their, they be all adulterers at the end of verse 2. And then in verse 3, and they bend their tongues like the bow for lies, but they are not valiant for the truth. And so this is where they are. And so Jehovah says at the end of verse 3, for they proceed from evil to evil, and they know me, know not me, saith Jehovah. They don't know him. Now, that's the condition of the people of Judah at this time. But they refuse to know Jehovah. Down in verse 6, thine habitation is in the midst of deceit, but through deceit they refuse to know me, saith Jehovah. So they don't want anything to do with Jehovah. And yet he's going to put them to the test in verse 7, and he's going to smelt them, he says there in the 7th verse. He is going to deal with them. Now when we get down to verses 13 through 16, Jehovah points out how they've forsaken him for idols. And you look at that, again, Jehovah speaks, and Jehovah saith, and he's speaking through Jeremiah. Here as he's spoken these words to Jeremiah, because they have forsaken my law, which I have set before them, and we notice that they did that, and have not obeyed my voice, neither walked therein, but have walked after the imagination or the stubbornnesses of their own heart, and after the Baalim, which their fathers taught them. So they were worshiping other gods, and we see their condition there. Therefore, thus saith Jehovah of Jehovah Sabaoth, the Elohim of Israel, behold, I will feed them, even this people, with wormwood and give them water of gall to drink. I will scatter them also among the Gentiles, whom neither they nor their fathers have known, and I will send a sword after them until I have consumed them. And so they're going to be overtaken, and they're going to be taken off in judgment. And God will bring judgment upon them, and the Babylonians will come. Now, in verse 17, down through the end of the chapter, we find the people are mourning. And so thus saith Jehovah in verse 17, Jehovah Sabaoth, consider ye and call the mourning women, that they may come and send for cunning women, that they may come. And we find their wailing here in verse 18, and let them make haste and take up a wailing for us, that our eyes may run down with tears and our eyelids gush out with waters. And so we see that in this segment that there's going to be a lamentation, there's going to be wailing, there's going to be a lot of sorrow for the people of Judah because of what they have done as Jehovah brings his fury upon them. And so it's going to be not a very nice time for them. Now, the idolatry of Judah and the prophet, we have the prophecy concerning her captivity when we come to chapter 10. And in chapter 10, you have a contrast of Jehovah with the idols made by men. And so it's Jehovah. But notice Jeremiah points out, hear ye the word which Jehovah speaketh unto you. Now, Jeremiah is speaking, but it's Jehovah who spoke to him, the pre-incarnate Son of God, gave him these words to speak. And now he addresses them as Israel. O house of Israel, thus saith Jehovah, learn not the way of the Gentiles, and be not dismayed at the signs of heaven, for the Gentiles are dismayed at them, and so on. They they go out and chop down trees and make idols out of the trees, and they adorn them with gold and silver and things. They make an idol. But then, when we come to verse 6, Jeremiah says, "For as much as there is none like unto thee, O Jehovah, thou art great, and thy name is great in might. Who would not fear thee, O King of nations," and so forth. But there is none like unto thee, he says at the end of the verse. He describes their idols again in verses 8 and 9. But in verse 10, he says, "But Jehovah is the true God." He is the God of truth. He is the living God. And it says he's a king of eternity. At his wrath, the earth shall tremble, and the nations, the Gentiles, shall not be able to abide in his indignation. And he goes on to describe, you have the comparison between Jehovah and the idols of the Gentiles. He tells us over in verse 16 that Jehovah Sabaoth is his name. And so he's the God of, and he's the true and living God. And that's down that, and so he makes this, he contrasts and compares God to the idols of the Gentiles. But the Israel and or Judah now, they have been worshiping idols, the idols of the Gentiles. Now you have prophecy concerning the captivity in 17 through 25, and we'll just look at a couple of verses here. In verse 18, he says, "For thus saith Jehovah, behold, I will sling, I'm going to throw out the inhabitants of the land at this once, and will distress them, that they may find it so." And then we will move on down a few verses to 21 and 22. "For the pastors, the shepherds, are become brutish, those who were their leaders, and have not sought Jehovah. Therefore they shall not prosper, and all their flock shall be scattered. Behold, the noise of the brood is come, and a great commotion out of the north country, to make the cities of Judah desolation, and a den of dragons or jackals." And so there's a cry now out to Jehovah, but at the end. But the nation Judah, what this pre-incarnate Son of God and his involvement with the southern kingdom now, and Jeremiah, as he was present to Jeremiah, it involved an appeal for the people to change their ways and to make them good. But then we see that they did not, and they didn't want to. And as they didn't, God said he's going to pour out his fury, his wrath upon them, and he is going to carry them away. He's going to throw them out of the land. And so this prophecy was made quite a few years beforehand, and yet we do find that by the end of Jeremiah's ministry that this was fulfilled exactly as it was stated. And so they will be carried off into Babylon ultimately. And so God, the word was with Jeremiah, and his word was dependable. And his word to us is just as dependable today as it was in the days of Jeremiah, as he spoke through Jeremiah the prophet. Father, we're thankful again as we look into your word, and we see that it is dependable. And as we look back into the past, into history, we can see that your word was fulfilled just as you promised it would be. And so again, we're thankful that we have a dependable God that we can depend upon, who is faithful. And we're grateful for that all of your ways are true. And so we're thankful again for yourself, for your Son, and for the person, the eternal Word, who came to earth to become flesh so that he could become our Savior. We're thankful for him once more. Amen.